Hello, everyone, and welcome to Write the Docs podcast. I'm Jared Morgan, a product owner and product manager. And joining me today is a few regular faces and someone new. So let's start off with the regular faces. We have Tom over in the US. Hi, Tom.
Hey, Jared. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm going really well. I can actually join this week. We tried doing this last week, this podcast, but there was a series of unfortunate events which prevented it going live. So we're trying again. We'll see how it goes again. exactly right. And over in Berlin, it is Berlin at the moment.
It is.
It's
and Jared, Chris, you're the only person not wearing a red jumper.
Yeah, that seems to be true. I didn't get the memo. Now for our special guest, we have someone joining us today who is probably, let's call him an expert on the subject because he knows a lot about what we talk into it. And this is Alice Pratt from Cherryleaf. Hello, Alice. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Expert always makes me feel very uncomfortable. Often one page ahead of everybody else.
Let me rephrase that. Person who knows more than us about the subject matter. Let's call it that. So today, we are going to cover the subject, emerging trend in business about chatbots and how they might be able to be used for documentation. So the idea is that, you know, that the thought behind this is that what we do is we set up a chatbot, but we link it in somehow to our documentation, and then magic happens, and then customers never call us anymore because, you know, the robots take care of it for us. But of course, it's not as easy as that. And we'd like to explore today a little bit about what sort of technical ramifications with chatbots are and the different types of chatbots and how you might actually look at provisioning them on your site and integrating them into your current body of knowledge. So let's kick it off. You've written, it was published yet, for a website. And I wonder how much you can actually go into out of that article, maybe pick the best bits out of it for us today. Maybe kick us off about, for those people who don't really know what chatbots are, let's start with sort of the basic definition of what chatbots are.
Okay. So just to go back on what you said there, the article we published as a PDF on our site, it was going as a blog post on Takeom's new blog site called Intelligent Information. That got published last week they've into a PDF themselves and jazzed it up as well. So in the show notes, I can provide a link to their PDF or to the one we created. And it's there as on the Intelligent Information blog site as well, if you want to read it online.
That's terrific.
First part of that article was what are chatbots, and I'm just going to look at it here because that's probably the best thing to do. So it's a service to interact with via a chat interface. You can ask questions using your voice or by typing in the same way you would ask a person. The chatbots usually respond in a conversational style, and it may carry out actions in response to your conversation. For example, order something for you. It often runs inside popular messaging applications such as Facebook Messenger, Slack, or SMS. It answers your questions rather than directing you to a website.
Okay. So instead of the more sort of, very sort of, I ask this, I give you that sort of response, chatbots are, I guess, more dynamic in the way that they can interact rather than being very sort of, one-dimensional.
I mean, there's a number of things you can pick up on that. Is that there's a couple of things why people are doing this. This is one of the questions Tom asked last time when we had the conversation last week. One is that people are spending a lot of their time in chat forums like Messenger and Slack, and the idea is bring the services to them rather than to you when they want information. And another aspect is the battle that's going on for search. And part of the reason why Apple and Facebook and others are looking at chat interfaces is that if you ask a question like, what's the best hotel, it can book it for you and it can bypass you needing to go to the Google search engine. So no one's going to beat Google at search, but if they can avoid the end user going to Google in the first place to get the things they want done, then Apple and the others can battle against Google, can get that revenue. So there's intelligence in understanding what questions you ask, and there can be intelligence in the sense of the answers they give, and intelligence in the sense of rather than just giving you information, integrating with other applications to complete a task. So the chatbot can be a front end to a layer of different applications.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty extensible. It seems that you can actually use a chatbot in not just the ways that I was originally thinking, which is just serving information up. Okay, it can be almost like a feedback loop that gets the person to where they need to go based on context, which is, that's pretty cool.
Yes, and in fact, so I sent this, I put together this article and sent it out to a number of people to review, one of which was Kai Weber, and who's in Germany, I can't remember quite where. And so one example is you might want to book a hotel room, and you might say, are there cheap rooms available in a hotel? And some chatbots can do that by basic tree navigation, and somebody asks this question and this is the answer and give them that information. But if somebody asks the question, are there cheaper rooms closer to the airport, then you've got all that semantic layer of where is the person that's asking the question, what's the nearest airport, what's the price compared to what they've already been given. And so there is a layer of intelligence where they can use machine learning and artificial intelligence to ask much more subtle, layered, finessed questions, which are more like the type of questions that we ask as human beings to somebody that would be answering us on the phone or face-to-face.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. So with chatbots, are there sort of, I guess there's different levels of chatbot, isn't there? There's ones that can be a little bit sort of passive in nature, or there can be ones that are like always in your face and asking you questions, or so a little bit like, I kind of liken it a little bit to Clippy, a little bit in some of the old Microsoft apps. So I'm always a bit confused about the right path to take with that. What is the best bot based on, I guess, its level of upfront interactivity?
Well, that is a very interesting question. So you've got all this technology. How do you get it to appear and interact with the end users? And there is a school of thought, and I think you had Pavel on your blog podcast a couple of weeks ago. He's been looking at having a front end to applications and chatbots and other things, giving you, prompting you with information. Did you know this? Did you know that? And Christoph Van Tom has done that. And they're thinking in that model of Clippy. Let's help the user as they go along. And that is one idea. There's the other, I got stuck. I want to make a call to the support line. And before you raise that support ticket, the chatbot gives you information to say, well, before you do that, have you looked at this? This might solve the problem for you. There's the little pop-ups that appear on websites. Hello, how can I help you? Which are as annoying as Clippy, to sort of try and guide you through there. And then you've got the more passive ones where you're in Slack or in Messenger. You type in your command line, look up, and it'll give you reference information, or how do I do that? And it will provide you textual information. Or probably the area where it's going to appear most is through voice. where you're using your mobile phone and you say, okay, Google, book me plane tickets, or okay, or Siri, do this or that, or in the context of what Tom's doing, Alexa, find me a good film to watch tonight, or something like that. Now, you've had these discussions again from your podcast about best ways to support end users, and I'm of the school of thought that fits in with the ideas of minimalism and John Carroll, that people get stuck and they get angry and they get focused, and if you have a clippy type interface, it doesn't work. If somebody's struggling, you provide the basic information and learnings for a different situation, learnings in a different place, and the style for learning and approach is different from when people get stuck. So I think the styles and the way in which it appears to differ depending on the context of what people are trying to do. So if they're asking a question in a chat interface, you can be human in style. If someone's stuck, you've got to guide them to the problem. If other situations, if it's learning different things. But I the ones that I found that work the best are the ones in the chat interfaces, where you're sort of looking up, which are mainly aimed at developer type audience or the voice ones, rather than these ones where you have a little dialogue box that pops there, says, oh, you're on this website, would you like help with doing that? Because I think most people would find that distracting, and it's too much, and it's too much in your face.
Mm. Yeah, I'm leaning towards that as well a little bit. It's, it should only be there when you need it, and it should only come up when you've got a question and you actually initiate the conversation. But look, that's me. What do you guys think about that, Tom? What are your thoughts on interactivity of a chatbot as it relates to documentation on the site?
I think that chatbots might just be the next evolution of or wizards. In a typical wizard, you start out with a question, and based on that answer, you branch to the next. And success that users report with wizards, because I think it applies a kind of progressive information disclosure technique where you're not overwhelming the user with too much information, and you're able to towards the information that they need based on these questions. And so theoretically, the chatbot is almost like a self-directed wizard where the user initiates the question and then the chatbot next sort of level, and then progressively you get towards maybe an answer. But internal conference last week, and somebody was talking about how this wizard-based documentation instead of regular documentation, it made a world of difference among users. So chatbots and different ways to through information without giving it to them all at once at the start.
So rather than overwhelming them with information, just trickle it out to them based on what they have sort of said. And I think, do you think that it's that derivation of information from what they're asking? I think that, to me, is the most challenging part of getting bots right. It's so they can actually understand the questions that you're asking. Alice, have any idea about approaches to doing that properly? Like, how do you actually train a bot to answer questions more accurately?
Before I answer that, can I just go back to what Tom said? I agree with Tom. And in fact, one of the examples use cases that came up in the research that we did was onboarding new starters in companies, guiding them through information and the time and effort that can take in getting people up to speed, knowing where different bits of information are, knowing which templates, which forms to use. There's a use case and companies that specialize in doing that through chatbots. And also with the wizards, another benefit from a documentation perspective is the customized and configured application, in that the chatbot can know how you've got the system configured and then provide you the relevant information rather than just generic information for certain situations. So to go back to your question, how do you create a chatbot? This is really going to be the next step for us in terms of the research that we do. So we're not at a, haven't done a great deal of poking around in this area yet, but there's, to generalize very broadly, there's two types of chatbots out there. There's ones where you in many ways predict the questions that people will ask, and then you have different potential answers and you have trees and branches depending what the responses are to the first answer that you gave. And I think one of the big, it might have been SAP, but one of the large vendors spent, I think, 70,000 man hours or something creating that type of chatbot for providing support to end users. The downside with that approach is that if the keyword or the question isn't in the database, then the chatbot's not really able to respond in the best way. The second way is through machine learning, and where you take a corpus or a huge body of knowledge, you dump that into a repository, into a corpus, and then the chatbot uses machine learning and artificial intelligence to look through that to see which is the best piece of information out of all the questions that might be asked by the end user and provide that to the end user. If it says no, if the end user says no, that isn't the right answer, then it learns that and it provides the next answer, and it learns iteratively which is the best response to give. Now that relies on a company having lots and lots of information to feed the chatbot. From a technical authoring perspective, a lot of that content will be the content created by technical authors. And the more semantically rich it is, the better the chatbot will be able to respond to those questions. And there may be opportunities to use corpuses like Wikipedia as well to provide more richer answers. But in addition to that, what you often have is a, I can't remember the right word, but you have a set of key questions and key answers, almost like a JSON file of question and answer. Is it a grain of truth, single grain of truth? I can't remember what it's called now. But that is the starting point, the sort of fundamental, most valuable, most correct, accurate information. And then you have this sort of dump of knowledge to supplement that and go from there. I'm trying to remember what the answer, what it's called.
It's like a baseline. It's like we know the answers to these. So these are definitely correct. The
ground truth.
Ground truth. Yeah, that sounds
the
right.
Ground truth. Yeah.
It's basically like the truth table for the bot. So it knows that based on this answer and that answer, this is correct. So based on that, when I apply machine learning and other technologies to it, I can use that as like my source of truth, my baseline knowledge, and then go from there and sort of branch out to see how things fit together with that known piece of information.
Yeah. So one question that will come up is this seen as a programming problem, and is the work of a UX designer or a programmer? Is this seen as a documentation problem and something that should be done by technical authors? And the nature of things is often it's the programmers that put themselves forward and say, oh, I can do this. And the technical authors sit there and wait to be asked. So it's an opportunity and a threat to the profession. And unless authors are familiar with what's going on and put themselves forward, it may be done by other people rather than them. So that's part of the reason for doing this, is to say, look, guys, you know, we as a profession need to say this is it's on our lawn. We should be doing this.
Hey, I've got a question. So Ellis, let's say that I'm site, and I'm sure you've seen this when you're on like a repair website or something, a little chat window opens and it says, hi, you know, can I help you find something? Or hi, can I answer any questions? And you know, somebody isn't just waiting there for a user to arrive. It's some kind of automated. The first steps to getting into chatbots, how could I add one of these features to my website that would say, are you a new technical writer? Are you looking for what? And provide some simple answers to like 10 most common questions. How could I actually?
So there are a number of companies that are offering the ability to add a chatbot to your website. One of the most useful sites out there is one called chatbotsmagazine.com. I think there is over 128 different vendors offering it. And so what you would do is you would select one of those, you'd pay the monthly fee, and you'll have an environment where you can list the potential questions that somebody might ask or the scripts that you want to do, and then your responses to the questions or answers they might give. And what will happen is it can provide like an HTML5 or dialogue or JavaScript overlay on top of your website, in the same way that you can add help on top of an application today without touching the underlying code. As to which is the best one, I couldn't tell you at this moment in time. There's a number of companies, quite a few out there, offering that as something you can get and do. So it would probably be the best, and I can find the link to the list of the players in that marketplace, but you would pick one of those, pay your monthly fee, write in their application, write your Q&As, and then it could then be integrated with your website.
I've actually seen some other bots that will integrate with your existing body of FAQ content. I think there's a couple called FAQbot.co and Q&Amaker.ai that will do that. We've got those in the notes that we identified already. I think one of those is actually provisioned by Microsoft from memory. I think it could be FactBot, FAQbot. But it seems like if you already have a body of knowledge to an extent, you can get started relatively easily and then see, you know, experiment, I guess, from my perspective, if as a product manager, I wanted to put this on a site or in an app, you know, this would be a very cheap way to experiment to see what sort of result I could get from implementing this. So that could be a really good place for people, perhaps. But we'll put that link to the site you mentioned, which is chatbotsmagazine.com, into the show notes so people can explore that a bit further. It sounds really good.
Yeah,
so I'm there's eager a couple to... of things. Just sorry.
Can no, I go ahead. Say something?
I've got quite absolutely. A bit. Absolutely.
actually, just going back a fair bit. So first, I actually see a couple of opportunities here. And chatbots are one of the technologies that interests me quite a lot at the moment for a variety of reasons. But I think as writers, one is the area of language. I've been to a lot of events from what Ellis has said about, you know, the programmers will jump in, and that is kind of the case at the moment. But they are all actually pretty much 95% of the chatbot events I've been to are also desperate for writers. They've all asked for writers, and they don't really want to do it themselves, actually. So there's actually a tremendous amount of opportunity there, especially for anyone who's got experience in kind of interface writing. Even as an example, I went to a meetup recently and offered my time as a writer, as a volunteer, to do chatbot writing because I was interested. And they actually said to me, oh, no, we've got work for you if you want it. So it really is a space where they're desperate for writers. So just jump straight in. And the whole sort of natural language processing aspect, as anyone who's interested in language, is fascinating as well. Just the kind of analysis of language is a whole other subject that's interesting. But I think my opinions on how this could be useful for documentation have changed a little bit in the past week, strangely. I guess initially I was a little bit naively thinking this could be a way of navigating entire document sets, and then realizing that having an entire page read out to you is probably not very appealing. And likewise, just popping it out in a chat box window is also not that appealing. But then I'd forgotten about a solution that's been around for a little while in a different capacity, but actually demonstrates this quite well. And it's from GitHub, called Whobot. It's a platform from GitHub that they predominantly use for DevOps, for deploying services, for checking statuses of services and things like that. But it's very extensible, and they've been using it for quite a while. They run most of their infrastructure and team on it. But it also has extensions and plugins for things like we've mentioned here, consulting Wikipedia pages, actually bringing up API endpoints and things like that. So there's little snippets of information, I think, where it's completely perfect. And I think the aspect that I personally had sort of thought about but wasn't really thinking clearly enough about was it's that where people are. And I was sort of naively thinking maybe an obvious opportunity would be on websites. But now I'm not so sure. Now I'm actually thinking that the better places are Slack channels, HipChat channels, support channels, because that's where people are. They're not necessarily on your website. They have to go to your website from somewhere else. And if they are in that other place already, you offer an interface into it maybe. That doesn't mean it couldn't be a website pop-up as well, but I think it'd be the same thing. It'd be these snippets of information, these kind of, how do I do this? Give me a quick overlay, and maybe that's enough to jog my memory, or maybe I then follow a link. But that whole context is really, really interesting. A lot of the aspects of the kind of sales and marketing chatbots that are the interesting ones are the fact they remember the conversation. They know what's come before. So if someone mentions I'm using Linux in a conversation, then unless they say otherwise, you don't need to show them anything about Mac or Windows because they said to you they're using Linux. It's that kind of context stuff that's, I think, most fascinating, because we've been arguing endlessly as a community about solving the search problem. And if, in fact, we flip this on its head to, instead of how do we get people to understand how we want them to find things we've written, but turn it onto this kind of much more conversational way of finding things, which is how people actually want to communicate, then I feel like if we can get this right, there's a lot of opportunities there, actually. And not just for us, sites like Wikipedia and things like that too, but anyone who's trying to help people find stuff. I think it's actually quite an interesting proposition when we start to think about it in that way.
So, Alison, Tom, it's an interesting point that Chris raises there, and that it seems to be chatbots seem to make more sense on something that's already a short form messaging service, something like Slack, something like HipChat or those sort of services, because we're already in the context of interacting with not a static layer like a website. It's almost like we're in the mood to interact because we're in a chat environment, and we kind of expect that perhaps we might see some automation in those type of environments. Do you think that that's something that perhaps would be a good way to first experiment with a bot? Or is there evidence out there at the moment that suggests that perhaps, you know, both have their merits? So website interaction versus a chat style interaction. What do you think the sort of stats are there, if there are any stats?
Well, if it's on a website, there's an attraction to saying to somebody, give us some money to create a chatbot because we can encourage more people to buy things. And in terms of the process of getting budget, you're probably more likely to get budget by saying you can increase revenues than say, can I have money? And we might make support better, or we might reduce support costs. So I think we're going to see more action in that sales, pre-sales environment, but the opportunity in terms of doing a good job is probably the other way around. And what is there is great opportunity with things like Slack, but my only concern with that is that that's mostly at the moment for a developer community, and the developers are used to command line interactions. They're technically very savvy. They're quite happy to do look up this or look up that, short codes, short commands, and that works well. What I think will be interesting is where people are putting it into things like Facebook Messenger, and see what the pickup and popularity of it is there. And again, don't forget voice. I think we're going to see more and more people asking questions via voice, and what comes back will be some sort of chatbot. But we've also got to remember that there is these sort of tree structured ones, and then there's ones like Watson and Google and Amazon have opened theirs up, and more, and Facebook, and there's an opportunity there to play around with those. There's APIs for all of those, and I think there'll be more effective ways of supporting people than just trying to predict what question somebody might have and then trying to match the right answer.
Can I just very quickly, because there's two things there that I'd just like to go into. I think the interesting aspect here of the like the chat applications that tend to utilize the short codes like Slack and HipChat, the slash or things like that, which I think are becoming more acceptable than you may think, but maybe that's just the organizations I tend to work in, of course. But I guess they're the ones where they tend to be at work, whereas Facebook Messenger, things like that, at the moment, I don't know if people use them at work, which is an interesting thing to consider about how people interact with them. And that's when you do get into natural language processing. But actually, the thing you said about voice was something that, again, triggered in my mind after our our aborted attempt at this podcast, which I think it's almost good to have a week to think about this, was that the interesting thing there, again, is the increasing prevalence. So if we want to, I actually almost try to steer clear of the specter of Clippy, because I don't know, it was a long time ago. But the interesting thing with a lot of the voice interfaces is now they're there all the time. They're sat there listening all the time, and whatever the ethics of that is a whole other conversation. But and actually there's some arguments to say they're not listening all the time, but anyway, that's a whole other conversation. But the interesting thing there is they will become increasingly a tool that people use just to ask random questions. Like you're there using your computer doing your work, and you happen to just think, I've got a question. Hey, blah, blah, blah. What's the answer to da, da, da? And it'll just be there, and whatever the question happens to be, if the right skills, actions, et cetera, are loaded up, it can help you. And I think this is another kind of interesting aspect that I don't think we're quite there yet, but this kind of constantly listening device to just, instead of changing your focus from your main work, just a quick kind of question answer back. I don't think it's there quite yet, but this is something I was thinking about the past week.
Well, there's a couple of things. That one is that they are ambient, they're passive. Mm. So they're not popping up and saying, oh, it looks like you want to ask me a question.
Yeah.
They're just waiting there. And there was a book, I think, called Findability, I think was out a couple of years ago, which I must read at some point. But again, in the past, we've had a help systems where there's been like a lit light bulb that was flashed or something like that. And when people are focused, things can get distracting. My only worry about voice is that everybody in an office was talking to their phone all the time. It would be a bit like being in a call center. And it's a bit like this thing of, oh, we'll never use a keyboard. We'll just do voice dictation in the future.
But there'll be no offices in the future.
maybe. But you know, everybody talking to their computers all the time, it would be a cacophony of noise. So I'm slightly skeptical that it would go to that extent. Let's say that.
Yeah. Have you ever used voice dictation software in a work setting? I once like cut my thumb and I couldn't type, so I was trying to use this voice dictation software, and I was really hesitant to just vocally dictate emails in an office setting because I just felt stupid. Right? People look over there like, "Are you talking to me? Who are you talking to? Or what if you're doing a search like, how do I launch a command prompt or something really simple? It makes you look dumb, you know. I work in an office where there's like a Echo engineers, and one guy literally would say the same phrase over and over and over. It about drove me nuts. Finally, we got moved to another floor. But yeah, I'm not so huge on the voice thing. But I was going to say, I'm sure there's more discussion about that
on the record.
have you seen I don't know what app this is, but while you're in help, there's a side pane that opens up that allows you to ask a question about the docs while you're inside the docs. And then when somebody answers it, that pane sort of populates with an answer from a real person. Have you seen this? I will have to put a link in there. I saw it in various docs, one from Beegit, BEEGIT.com, when I was using that service. And I found that helpful. I mean, I get a little frustrated interacting with computers, bots, when they're dumb, right? If you have a sophisticated question, imagine if you have a question that's like a deep technical sort of error. You know, I got this specific error response and I'm trying to do some complicated thing. No chatbot's going to help you, right? So it makes me think, okay, that this layer of either voice interactivity or chatbot can only apply to simple questions that it can answer. And is it really worth like all the time and effort that would be required to do that? Maybe, you know, I don't know. It would require experimentation. I'm definitely open to doing this. I want to do this on my website, first of all, because 80% of the people on my website are first-time newbies or like, hey, how do I get into technical writing? At least that's my impression, because that's what 80% of the questions are, just basics. So, you know, maybe from an 80-20 point of view, it could work, and maybe that would be easy because it'd be simple questions.
Yeah, well, I think the best approach will be is if we have a chat line in a website. So there's like a command line at the bottom of a page, and you can just
like a Google search,
just ask a question. Well. I think the pop-ups will go out of fashion. They'll be seen like flash intros. I think people hate them. So I think it will need to be much more passive, like a search box, maybe on a page, what question do you want to ask? And it presents itself like you would search today and then gives you an intelligent answer.
But a back and forth as opposed to just, here's a bunch of answers. It's sort of like interactive faceted search. Well, actually, no, faceted search is interactive, but anyway, it's a conversational faceted. I'm not sure. I don't know. Yeah.
We get a whole lot of new interesting terms, don't we? We have CUIs now, conversational user interfaces. So it's like this whole new set of acronyms that we have to add to the Department of Acronyms department. So that's fine. It's going to be interesting to see how people. And I guess people get data back because it seems that with this particular aspect of IT, the chatbot world is really quickly innovating. You're seeing things like the way that Google and the Google Assistant is integrating more and more into different things. And it might be, like this is just a purely theory, but it might be that Google actually start offering a way to plug that into your own sites and start indexing information, you know.
Well, in hardware, this is happening. We were at IFA a couple of weeks ago, which is like the Europe CES, basically, and one of the many trends was voice assistants in everything. And the interesting thing is it's not, apart from Samsung maybe, not companies making their own. It's companies integrating, well, mostly Alexa and Google Assistant. And that kind of makes sense because you get standardization and also it saves the other company's development time, of course. And it was everywhere, including in things I don't think even worked, like robots. I'm pretty sure Alexa doesn't handle moving things around. but still, it was interesting. If not slightly ridiculous on some of the aspects, but it's really everywhere. And I guess we've been skirting around this issue of how popular is it really? And this is the interesting aspect. I mean, everyone's talking about it. Everyone seems to be doing things, but how many people use it is actually an interesting statistic to try and get a bit more answer on.
I definitely think that one reason the Alexa voice service has taken off is because, as you say, it's a voice platform that people can use across any product. It's not just Amazon products. And that's a powerful sort of platform. You could see how it could be leveraged. your third-party product. You can build an Echo clone, right? And people have done it. Mm. That's pretty cool. So,
yeah, this.
Go ahead.
I was just going to go back to you asked the question, what does this mean for small companies that don't have a great deal of information? And this is a question. And often what people will do to build these chatbots is they will use the Google API or the Amazon API or the Facebook API or the Microsoft API. And in some ways, you will be giving your body of knowledge to those companies, which they'll probably treat fine, but you're relying on their algorithm and their service to provide your that chatbot, and that pulls their control and their dominance in the marketplace. And again, it will be interesting to see what happens to the cost of the Google service and so forth, and whether that will slowly go up and up and up. So for small companies, they'll be piggybacking off the big boys, and
there are open source options available, but yeah, I mean, open source always means a slight degree of inconvenience to get started and host it yourself, but they do exist.
Correct. Yeah, I think that's the thing with this sort of technology. It's moving so fast that to roll your own, it's almost like going backwards, whereas, you know, you have to trade off, I guess, I want to be completely disconnected from the big players and run this myself. Or, yeah, I'm happy to sell my information to these big players because that's more convenient for me and more cost effective. So it comes down to what your values are and what your business drive is, I guess. But you're right. You know, it's going to be a little like a Betamax versus VHS sort of argument, I think.
As we're aging ourselves here.
Yeah, I know. Well, sorry, DVD versus... Blu-ray versus Oculus versus whatever, you know, all these sort of like race to the top things, and someone's going to win it, but it's just going to, it's a little bit too early to tell who yet. I think closing thoughts on this, it seems that to me it could be a trade-off. It could be worth doing chatbots for docs if the barrier to entry is low and you've got a decent body of knowledge already to actually throw at the bot. I think you'd have to, if you're pitching this to your organization, you'd have to work out the right place to put the bot. In the long tail end of the business, so the support end. I think there's probably a different bot for both, really, because I think the body of knowledge you need to throw at a bot that on the pre-sales end will be different to the long tail end of support. So there's a lot of things that you need to experiment, I think, with this, but I think it's something that's certainly going to become more common. I think Alison and Chris are definitely right there. It's going to become a thing that get more accustomed and more naturally accustomed to interacting with. And I think if you're going to stay current, there's actually opportunities here for technical writers to branch out into this area and actually start focusing on more atomic content that these bots could actually consume. So it's pretty exciting. Like who would have thought that having robots do the work would actually create more jobs in this particular case?
Well, this is a whole other conversation, but yes.
I would say to any tech author out there that part of what they need to be saying is, let's not create yet another silo of information of answering people's questions. There's a temptation with chatbots to say, okay, we'll write this, all the answers to the people they might have. The clever solution is to take what we have, which the authors have written, maybe semantically, maybe not, and let's use that as the basis for providing the answers. And that gets the author, the technical writer, in the team to do it, and it avoids, a marketing silo, a tech pub silo, and then this chatbot silo, because the technical product information, questions people might ask, probably already exists, and that should be reused.
Oh, absolutely. Single source all the things. So everything that your business needs can talk to everything else. So I think really it's API the docs in this case is probably a great approach. You know, expose everything that can be consumed in a normal way. So you can plug it into any, yeah, it's absolutely true. Good point. Have you got any closing thoughts, Tom?
Sure. My closing thoughts are, if people are listening to this and they would like to share any kind of chatbot example that either they created or which they're fond of, definitely love to see that. So,
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be very cool. And you can interact with them, and you can also send us an email directly. So those, all the information of how to contact us is on the website and in the show notes. So definitely go and reach out to us if you'd like to further the conversation. This is an area where I think everyone can benefit from sharing because it's so new. So yeah, definitely do that. Chris, any closing thoughts?
Experiment. Try new avenues. It's all words.
Yeah, absolutely. And Chris, Ellis, have you got any closing words?
I think avoid silos, I think, is probably the main one. I mean, like all of these things, we're seeing this sort of trend that tech authors are going to need to be a bit more technical than they maybe were before. Chris is exactly right. It's still going to be giving content to people, to the questions they have, and that's what tech authors are good at. But there might need to be a bit of technical skills needed to make those words appear in the right places.
Good point. Okay, well, thanks to everyone today for their participation in the chat. It's been incredibly interesting to me, and I hope you've got some value out of it as well. Like Tom said, definitely continue the conversation if you've got any follow-up questions, and we can actually direct them through to the team here and see if we can answer them for you. But yeah, if you've got any examples of chatbots that are working well for you, again, share those as well, because I think it'd be pretty cool to see what people are doing with this technology. So that's a wrap for this episode. Thank you very much, Ellis, for joining, and for our regulars, Chris and Tom, for coming again to the podcast. We'll leave it there. Check the website for show notes and details. And remember, docs or it didn't happen.